the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue. Rangers Podcast. With Andrew Shelby. And Nick Zeraris.
Rangers fans, welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chelney, alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, they beat the Devils, they shut out the Hurricanes, they gave one up to the Lightning, but they collected 4 points in a back-to-back against Pittsburgh and the Islanders. 8 out of 10, five games in 8 days. It's not bad.
You got nothing to complain about right now. You got to get healthy, but everybody's dinged up this time of year, so you can only do so much. They're playing reasonably well. You know, Shesterkin coming along has kind of given them a little bit of a jolt. You know, they were in that really bad rut that kind of turned at that Ottawa game where Connor Mackey, who still hurt, so I don't know who the seventh defenseman is going to be with Ruedel drawing in. I'm sure we'll find out tomorrow before the game.
I think Scanlon got up.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, I vaguely remember seeing something about that, but they're in solid shape. You know, they've got one of the best records in the entire league. They've got a little leeway here for the next few weeks as they try and get through these injuries between Trouba and Lindgren. Don't know how long Lindgren or Trouba will be. You know, we know how hockey injuries are, where they say day to day, week to week, and real quick it becomes a month. So we'll get a better idea of that as time passes. But
the reports are he's going to miss a few weeks, whatever that means. That could be three. That could be until game one of the playoffs.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, at full speed, the Twitter doctors are all saying meniscus or ACL. And if it's a strain, not a tear, that's not a terribly unrealistic timeline. But without knowing firsthand what the situation is, same thing with Trouba. You know, they say lower body injury, and we don't know exactly what the lower body
could be. Anything.
Literally anything. And being that we have no idea what it is, there's no real like guess. Like, we don't even know if it's ankle or knee. We don't know if it's a bone or a ligament. So we're going to really find out a lot about the three healthy guys that are still in the lineup. Excuse me. Yeah, three. And Fox, Miller, and Schneider. And Gus, I should say. So four. We're going to find out a lot about those guys. And I would say in the Carolina game, and I would say in the Pittsburgh game, you got really good Adam Fox, especially the Carolina game. Yep. And we talked about it a few weeks ago, the idea of if shit's kind of hitting the fan, who's the guy that's going to make a play? And a lot of the time for this team, it's Fox, because he's able to do so much for other guys to kind of set them up. But big picture, my big takeaway from the last week, you got to enjoy moments like this, man. They've played really exciting games. That Carolina game felt like a playoff game. The Tampa Bay game felt like a playoff game. And we get caught up in the how are they going to rectify this? How are they going to get ready for the playoffs? What do they need to fix? What do they need to improve? And that's missing part of the story. You know, we talk a lot about the romanticism of the long story, the journey, the team climbing out of a hole and going on a run and making something magical happen. And you get games like the other day where you get a goal from everybody on your third line. And that's the kind of game you point to if there's a parade in June and say, you remember that game where you got goals from everybody in the bottom six? You remember when they took all those points against these division rivals? You know, we talk about it a lot going into the stadium series. Even when the Islanders are bad, they play the Rangers really well. So the fact they came out and stomped the Islanders in a game the Islanders needed to have, that sends a real message about this group. They are dinged up. They need to get healthy. But they are showing you some resolve that hasn't been there, especially not last year. This team feels a lot different than last year.
And you take a look at even how they approached games like this, even last year under Gallant, where the Islanders are bad. We know that they're bad. The Islanders know they're bad. They've been struggling. They needed that win really badly, way more than the Rangers needed that win. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously it's always fun to beat your division rival. It's as you know, as the Rangers, it's always fun to beat the Islanders, but the Islanders desperately needed those 2 points. last year, you can make the argument that the Rangers might not have shown up for the entire game. They might have shown up for like half the game or maybe a period or a shifts here and there, but they wouldn't have played a full 60 against a team that they deemed below them. This year is a completely different mindset for this team, at least lately. If you want to argue they had a couple of bad losses like Columbus or whatever, I'll give you that. But on Sunday, the New York Islanders, who are reeling, they are trying everything they can to fight their way to the second and final wild card spot. And they've lost a few in a row. They haven't looked good. They're getting frustrated. And the Rangers shut the door in their face. And that is really impressive. This is a team, and even Patrick Wall after the game was like, oh yeah, the Rangers had more energy. They looked a lot better. I don't know what my team is doing, et cetera. It's like, this is exactly what we've been fighting for with this team for the past few years now, where they would play against other good teams well, and then they would get to games like this and then just lay an egg. But this year, the team is playing different. They are playing their way no matter what the opponent is, and that's been such a massive improvement under Peter Laviolette that I've been noticing. This is not just an X's and O's thing. This is a mindset approach. This is a different mentality. And I applaud Laviolette and the entire coaching staff for how they've been able to successfully change the player's mindset when it comes to games like this.
I completely agreed with you. And I think expanding off of that, the thing that really encourages me is a lot of different styles of game over the last week.
Yes.
You know, it got away from them defensively in Pittsburgh. They did not play well defensively against the Penguins, but they were able to outscore them and take advantage of Pittsburgh's bad defense.
Quick played really well.
Yes, that too. And they were able to win a rock fight 1-0 against Carolina, where Carolina is going to try and outlast you, and the Rangers outlasted Carolina. That is the type of win you can feel good about. And I tie it back to that Carolina game at the end of November, the one where Kako and Fox both got hurt. I mean, those are two games you can point to and say they really showed you a lot. And I know it's easy to just chalk it up to, well, yeah, they found a way to win. But when you go and look and you think about the emotional toll of those types of games where, you know, Fox and Kako both get seriously injured, you don't know how hurt they are. You think about it in the context of the Tampa Bay game where Zibanejad missed quite a bit of that period. They had to find some type of offense from somewhere, and it didn't come from anywhere. And that was ultimately what kind of undid them against Tampa Bay, was everybody in the Rangers' bottom nine basically played to a push where they didn't concede a lot, but they also didn't generate a lot because Tampa Bay just wasn't letting them get to the middle. And then Zibanejad, Kreider, and Roslovic kind of got caved in, and that was really what ultimately swung the game. I mean, they were on the ice for a lot of the goals against, and then when Tampa Bay smells blood, like you said before we started recording, they're going to pounce on it. You know, Kucherov and Point and Stamkos, those guys have been through the wars. If you give them opportunities, they're going to take it. But the encouraging thing was they came out Saturday, they came out Sunday, and they took care of their business. And in a week like this, with so many games in a tightly compacted window, with really varying ranges of emotional engagement, they managed to keep it relatively level. And that is something you can build upon. And that's something that's beyond just the X's and O's and having a feel for the system. It falls upon, okay, we know that in any given game, we have a few different paths to victory, and we can find something that works for us on a given night. It's just a matter of figuring out what each game is going to unfold as.
And to that extent, it's really also impressive to take a look at how they won these games, because it wasn't just, you know, Shesterkin stopping 97 shots out of 98 and the Rangers hang on to a 2-1 victory. Like, that's not what happened this week. Yeah, you could argue that Pittsburgh should have scored more goals against Jonathan Quick. He played really well. The 1-0 game was really tight. Both goaltenders were incredible in that game. But and you mentioned this a second ago, they beat Carolina 1-0. It was a really tight game where both goalies stopped sure goals in most other situations. A couple of breakaways, a couple of great opportunities. Both goalies were great. And, you know, 1-0 was a score. And then you get to Pittsburgh, and then you just outscore the hell out of them. There is no defense. Defense optional. Everything was just open. Get as many opportunities as you can, both ends of the ice. Whoever scores more is the winner. That's a different style of game. And you get to the Islanders game where the Islanders had a couple of opportunities, especially the first goal. It was just a breakdown defensively. No one broke up the pass, and you know, things happened. But then for the most part, the Rangers just dominated the game at 5-on-5, at special teams. It didn't matter. The Rangers said, this is our game, this is our pace, and you follow us, not the other way around. Like, they've won four games, and you could argue in all four of them, they played different styles of hockey. And that's what's really impressive. That's one of the things that's really impressive to me watching them, is they're not just winning in one way, and that's how they're living and dying. They're saying, oh, you know, we can... Their adaptability is really one of the most impressive things from the team this season.
This is from Rob Luker. He tweeted this Friday morning after they lost to Tampa Bay. Last night, so we're talking about the Tampa Bay game, was only the eighth game all year where the Rangers did not get a power play goal or average or better goaltending. In games where the Rangers get at least one power play goal, they're 28-8-0. When they get average or better goaltending, 38-3-3. In games where they get both, 23-1. And then if they get neither, 0-7-1. So you've got your two components there. We talk about the Rangers strategy, their path to victory being playing close at 5-on-5, goaltending, special teams. Goaltending and special teams can make up for a lot of your issues, especially in the regular season, when you have the talent the Rangers do. You know, we're going to talk about Panarin in a couple minutes here, but when you have a player moving at that level, that's playing like one of the 5-10 best players in the league, and you get to drop Adam Fox on the ice at the same time as him on the power play, they're just, you know, there's 4 or 5 teams in the whole league that can do better than that. So when you have that as your baseline, and you know, and we talked about this last week, you know, it's coming. Zibanejad is getting there with the counting stats.
He's got 2 5-on-5 goals, baby. We got it. We've done it. Nick, we've done it. Stop talking about it now. Let's go.
He's getting on the sheet. He's starting to get a little more of a feel. Roslovic is helping because he's opening up a little more space. He's carrying the puck through the neutral zone. That is encouraging. The opportunity is really in front of them. And I said this last week, and I'll say it again. This is the honeymoon phase where you're going to start talking yourself into this, because the path is as wide open as it's ever been. They are playing well, but it still feels like they have one more tier they can get to. And Shesterkin's heating up, which is the single biggest factor into why I feel a lot more confident than I did a few weeks ago. He's had an insane month. He's got a .940 save percentage in his last 11 starts. He's got, I want to say, 15 goals saved above expected. Where is it? Where did I write it down? Yeah, 15.78 goals saved above expected since February 5th. 15.7 goals saved above expected, .940 save, 1 loss in that time period. He's playing like the best goalie in the world, and that's behind the team that's getting better a little bit every game as they further integrate Wennberg and Roslovic. That's your elevator pitch right there, and you know there's still another level to get to.
This, and I don't want to, you know, jinx anything. I don't want to say anything, you know, too crazy here, but I tweeted this out, I think it was yesterday, where there's a different feel, especially compared to last year. Last year, during the whole Kane and salary cap hoop jumping and like all these things where the vibes were, it's fine. We'll get there. Oh, it's fine. And I probably got dumpstered. This year, it's all the vibes feel infinitely better. And it's funny to think of it in that way, because when we talk about vibes, we're not even, you know, we're not on the team, obviously. Two, we're not covering the team. We're not with them for hours a day, you know, every single day. Like, we're not physically near the team all day, every day. And yet from a wild distance, it is so obvious to anyone who's paying attention that the vibes are so different comparatively that it's not even close. Like, this team is playing well together. Their mindset is it has changed dramatically from last year, like we talked about a minute ago. They are stomping on opponents they should be stomping on. They are not letting anything go. This is a team that's playing well together, no matter who's in front of them. And that's one of the biggest, you know, like we talked about, that's one of the biggest changes that I've seen with new coaching management. And it's just been a joy to watch. And yeah, I mean, it's you know, the middle of March. So we got, what, like a month to go until the playoffs. We got 15, 17 games, something like that. So a lot can change from now until then. But as of right now, they are looking really good, and it's tough to not feel good when watching them play.
So I want to build off of that even further. I think all the proof you need to know that the vibes are different is how well the guys who have drawn in spot starts have played. You know, Laviolette's talked about Jones, and I've got some Zach Jones numbers I want to highlight. Roslovic has integrated pretty well with Zibanejad and Kreider, and Wennberg is doing exactly what he's been expected to do. And there haven't really been a ton of hiccups. You know, Roslovic wasn't great in the Tampa Bay game. The one turnover was pretty bad, but you're not expecting him to be a world beater. He's more or less doing his job. If you put him on the ice the same time as Kucherov, Point, etc., you know, you're going to run the risk of the other team's guys who are better than him making something happen. But Zach Jones drawing in, playing well, and everybody else kind of sliding up and playing well, that's an encouraging sign that there's a baseline comfort and a baseline understanding of everybody's responsibilities. You know, Schneider has played really well over the last 2 weeks with Miller. The Trouba question, I think, will be more pertinent as we get closer to a return date for him. But in the meantime, Jones, in the games he's played, he drew in on the 5th of March was his first game. 53% of the scoring chances, 80% of the goals, 50% of the expected goals, 59% of the high danger. I think the single biggest reason he looks so different from everybody else is he's really good on the puck. I think that's the big difference between him and a lot of these third pair guys the Rangers have tinkered with in years past, is he is comfortable with the puck on his stick. He's good at passing the puck out of danger and getting it where it needs to go. The one drawback, you know, whenever you play one of the undersized offense inclined defensemen, he's not going to be as good as defense. You know, that's the trade-off. And there's a reason Zach Jones, you know, hasn't gotten as much of a run. We know historically the Rangers have liked size and imposing people on that third pair, because generally speaking, that pair is going to be playing tougher minutes and they're going to be up against other teams' bottom six guys who are going to be more inclined to play physically. You know, we talked about the Gustafson goal against the Blackhawks in early February, where he just got bullied in front of the net. And those are the limitations. That's the reason a guy like Gustafson, a guy like Jones, they're not playing higher up in lineups in other places. But for what Zach Jones is, he is a really good spot starter, and there's an argument that he's playing himself into a bigger role, and at the very least, he makes it a question. The answer is obviously Trouba's coming back in and he's coming back out, but at least it's making people who aren't as analytically inclined realize, okay, there's more than one way to play defense now.
He is good.
He's actively good.
And I know Laviolette has been really gassing him up, and for a good reason. And Laviolette does a really good job of this, whereas the previous regime did none of this. Is Zach Jones steps in after not playing for months, essentially. Like, my man was sitting up in the press box just watching and practicing for a good while. Steps in and not only holds his own, he's playing well. He's playing exactly what his role is supposed to be, exactly what he's been asked to do. He's been great. And that's one of the, it's not even, like, I guess it's surprising, but it's one of the biggest pluses of this blue line so far. Yeah, Trouba's out. Lindgren's out until who knows. No one will know. No one will tell us. But in the meantime, this could have been an issue. Where if Zach Jones struggles for a couple of games, okay, well, you get Chad Ruedel in. Okay, well, if somebody gets hurt, then what do? Do you go to Scanlon? I know Mackey's hurt, but now it becomes a little bit of an issue. But with Zach Jones playing as well as he has been, Chad Ruedel, I would have to imagine, was either supposed to play against Pittsburgh or quote-unquote should have played against Pittsburgh because that was his former team. But because Jones was playing so well, Laviolette was literally like, I cannot remove him from my lineup. Everyone else is the mainstay, so I can't move them. Zach Jones is playing so well for me that Chad Ruweedel can't play against his former team because I cannot justify taking Zach Jones off the ice. And that is such a positive on the way that he's been playing. Because, you know, I have to tell you, Nick, like, it's really difficult to sit in the press box for a long time and then just step in to the roster and play as well as he has. It is not easy. It is really difficult. And the fact that he's been doing it with flying colors, I can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Jones played a little bit in October, a little bit in September. He played two games in December, three games in January, and then one game in February, and then the ninth against St. Louis is the first game he's played in this stretch. So really important to have this type of depth, and it's something that's been a recurring theme this year. You know, the Rangers have gone on these crazy runs earlier in the season. They went out 19-4-1 out of the gate. This, in their last run, they're like 16-3-1 since the All-Star, something like that. You're on a heater like this, that means people all over the lineup are picking up their weight. You know, when Brodzinski first came up, he was like 9 points in six games. You need those type of unsustainable binges at certain points of the season because that's what happens in a long season. You need people to help make up gaps all over the lineup. The great example I'll give you, I talked about Shesterkin's stats a minute ago. I've said this almost every week since the start of March, but going into the second week of January, he had an .897 save percentage. In the last month, he's at .940. That's water finding its level. Shesterkin's probably not going to play a .940 goalie the rest of the way, but you know he wasn't an .898 goalie. Based on his statistics, based on the track record we understand about goaltending, if somebody consistently puts up between .910 and .915, they're going to end up somewhere within the margin of error there. They're going to end up somewhere around between .910 and .920. If Shesterkin's playing at .915, .920 save in the playoffs, the Rangers are a hard out. And that's the baseline of just they're a hard out. Then you start getting into, well, you get these guys that start making leaps. You know, I was really encouraged, and we'll talk about this. I was really happy to see Laviolette reward Will Cooley with some more ice time trying to put that game away. That is an encouraging sign. That's something we talked about in regards to who they would bring at the deadline of, well, is Laviolette going to try and design a matchup fourth line where they're going to salt the game away at the end of games? And we had talked about maybe did they trust Rempe to do that? Probably not. So who would do it? To get Cooley, who has been, you know, one of the lowest usage forwards, that tells me Laviolette's trust in him is growing and that there is a path to him having a bigger role on the team going forward as he gets better and rounds out his game a little bit more. And that gives you more options, which is the recurring theme of this episode. The Rangers are not as pigeonholed as they have been in years past, where they have to play one style to work. The Rangers have options for the first time in quite a long time.
It's a lot of fun. This is a lot of fun to watch. And again, we talked about this where in years past, they would have their one way of playing. They would have, this is the way the Rangers play. This is their hard counter. And if you hard counter it, they're going to flounder at 5-on-5 until they hope you take a penalty, and then maybe they'll score on the power play. That's how they used to play. After the deadline, and again, some of this is honeymoon. Some of this is, you know, they're clicking at all cylinders, and you know what happens if they stop doing that or whatever. You can have that thought experiment. But as of right now, with how they've been playing, they have shown that they can beat you in multiple different ways. Oh, we're not getting power plays, or we're not scoring them. Okay, we'll just dominate you at 5-on-5, like they did against the Islanders. Like it's you're not playing any defense against us? Oh, okay, we'll just score 7 on you like they did against Pittsburgh. Oh, you're playing a lot of defense and your goalie's playing really well? Okay, we'll play really good defense and we only need to score one goal because we'll win the game. And that's how they won against Carolina. Like, they have shown that they are very adaptable and very comfortable in chaos. Every game this past week has been a different experience, and they looked comfortable in all of them. The Tampa Bay game got away from them. You could argue, like, whatever, sure. But at the end of the day, one, you can't win all 82 games. And two, like, yeah, games like that are going to happen. But they looked, for the most part, some of the players against Tampa didn't look great. But for the most part, they look comfortable no matter who they're playing, against what system, what's going on the ice. And that is something that you can't say that they had success with in previous years. And that's been great.
when you have options, it opens things up. You think about some of the really good regular season teams over the years and the issues they've run into in the postseason, whether we're talking about the Rangers of last decade, we're talking about the Sharks of last decade, we're talking about the Bruins post Stanley Cup, Washington pre Stanley Cup, Pittsburgh pre the back to back in 16-17. All of those teams, when they were in that rut where they, you know, in the playoffs, went around here or there, but everybody kind of started to give them until I see it, I won't believe it mentality with having a variety of ways to win. And the Rangers haven't been able to reconfigure their roster as dramatically as some of those teams in their process of trying to get to contender status, but they have tailored it. They have tinkered around the edges. And I have been extremely critical at points of the general manager because he is focused on stupid things as opposed to trying to find ways to improve the roster. He's focused on trying to do very specific things. And the fact they made the conscious decision, we spent all of last season with Ben Harper as the 6th D for the most part. To go from Ben Harper to Erik Gustafsson is a clear, okay, that did not work. Let's try something else in that spot. Same exact mindset with going from Barclay Gaudreau in the top six to Blake Wheeler in the top six. Same exact type of mindset. We tried this one thing. Let's try something else. And the tinkering around the edges on this group in particular seems to have worked a little bit more than it has in years past. And maybe, you know, that's just things averaging out, that he's getting better at his job the longer he's in his job. And that's perfectly possible. But identifying, okay, we don't have this type of player. Where can we get close enough to what we need? And I'm excited to see what happens over the next few weeks, because we're going to get a lot more Miller. We're going to get a lot more Schneider. And that's something that the Rangers are going to need to go know about the team going forward. Not even just about this year, the playoffs, etc. Miller and Schneider are supposed to be building blocks, you know, long-term, the next 5 to 10 years on the team. So if they can thrive in bigger roles over the next few weeks in the absence of Trouba and Lindgren, I tweeted it the other day. If Schneider takes a leap, that opens up a lot more doors. That means you can roll all three pairs and you don't have to shelter them. And it means going forward, his ceiling is higher. That is all stuff that's extremely encouraging for your short-term and your long-term mindset.
One of the biggest things for a general manager, and for some, they are in their jobs for 100 years and they never do this, acceptance that they were wrong about something. Chris Drury, from our perspective anyway, it has clearly understood, hey, Ben Harper at 60, Gaudreau top six forward, was not the correct options. I was wrong in these situations, and here is how I fix that. A lot of GMs don't do that. You take a look around the league, and there are certain GMs where it's their way or the highway, no matter how many times it doesn't work. Chris Drury this year has done a really good job of identifying, okay, the X, Y, and Z clearly did not work in years past. So let's try this instead. Okay, so now instead of trading for Kane, instead of trading for Gensel, instead of trading for the top guy, because it's the Rangers and they always get the top guy. Okay, so let's get these auxiliary players who might not be the reason people buy tickets, but are the reason the Rangers are going to play better as a result. This is his approach this season, as opposed to just running it back from last year, or, oh, we got Patrick Kane. Okay, well, you know, well, then why didn't it work? Okay, well, so let's table that. Let's get Roslovic, Wennberg, and Ruedel instead. Maybe that's going to work. And instead of it just being, you know, great on paper, maybe it's just going to work great on the ice, and then they can bring a cup home as a result. This is the adaptability is something that I really like from the managerial staff for the Rangers, because like I said, a lot of teams have certain managers that it's their way. Maybe they'll change one or two things here and there, but for the most part, they are steadfast in how they want to build the team, no matter what happens, no matter how bad somebody is or what have you. they have, you know, their way of the highway, and Chris Drury is not one of those people. He's identified the mistakes he's used to he made in the past, and now he's looking to fix them. And I mean, so far, it's looking pretty good.
Expanding off of that, it really does feel like he's going to ride the guys who got him here. You know, I think that's a lot of what I would say about this group, that he has the steadfast belief in the Zibanejad, Kreider, Panarin, Trocheck, Trouba, Fox, Shesterkin group. That has been the recurring theme, because he has done everything oriented around those guys. And we talked about this going into the deadline. You know, this might be this. If they bounce out early again, he won't get fired, but the conversation will heat up around him. So this is one of your big shots. You know, every general manager only gets so many big shots where they can make a decision, and then you have a direct correlation. You know, you either made a long run and, you know, you hit a wall in the conference final or the cup final, or you went all the way, or you bounced out in the first round because something you thought was going to work didn't work. But changing up subjects, this is something I think that's really interesting, that it's kind of hard to contextualize, and this is going to sound weird, but the Rangers have been around an awfully long time as a franchise. Panarin's been here about 5 minutes, and he's already probably one of the 7 or 8 best players in the history of the team. And I know that's going to upset a lot of old heads who are going to talk to me about Bill Cook and John Van Beesbrook and people who played with wooden sticks and didn't wear helmets, but Panarin's one of the 10 best players in the world in 2024. The average hockey player today is 100 times better than the average hockey player 50 years ago. Panarin, when all is said and done, he's going to have a reasonable chance of finishing in the top 10 of assists. He's already the franchise leader in points per game. I don't know if he'll get to 10th in goals. He's only at 138, and 10th place is 240. That's a lot of goals to accrue over the next 4 years, but I think there's no doubt he's the best free agent signing in the history of the team.
Yeah.
And he's very clearly going to end up being, even if he doesn't end up with his jersey retired because they don't have the team success, he's undoubtedly one of the best players in the history of the team. And you talk about it, man. You got him, you got Fox, you got Shesterkin, you got Kreider. We're talking about, and it sounds weird to say without the team success, but post the hiring of John Tortorella, it's hard not to call this the golden age of Rangers hockey. And that includes 4 years where they were absolutely irrelevant.
It's tough to look at it and say, oh, well, you know, how could this team be so incredible when they haven't had any Stanley Cups? But like, this is a phenomenal team. This team that's on the ice right now is phenomenal. And, you know, how we'll view this roster obviously is going to determine, you know, in the next 3 months or so. But you take a look at this lineup up and down. Yeah, if you want to laugh at Goudreau's contract, you can. If you want to laugh at, you know, Gustafson maybe not even being here next year because Jones is making that big step and they get somebody else, maybe you can say that. But maybe, you know, this is Rempe mania, this is the Rempe year, like this is the year of the Rempe, like, and his black eyes. If you want to do that, sure, but by all accounts, this is one of the best teams that we have watched. And I and they won the President's Trophy in 2015, I want to say, with 113 points. Like, that was a great team. Sure. But this team feels, on whether it be on paper, whether it be what, you know, if you're watching it, this team feels as good, if not even better than that year. Like this roster has the making of something special. It's just a matter of getting to that finish line.
You brought him up. We can talk about it real quick. I'm very curious to see if Rempe comes back in tomorrow. I know that's been a point of conversation over the weekend. I know there was a lot of, all right, as soon as Rempe's eligible, we got to get Brodzinski out of here because he played so poorly against Tampa. And then he played really good over the weekend in both games, Saturday and Sunday. I wonder how they're going to use Rempe down the stretch. We talked about this with Molly in the context of, is he going to be in the lineup in the playoffs? Because you can't play a fourth liner 7-8 minutes a game in the playoffs, because then you're playing with 11 forwards, and that's just putting too much on the plate of other guys. We don't really know, frankly, if he's going to draw back in or not. I think there's an argument either way. You might sit him one extra game after the suspension's over just to kind of be like, all right, you do this again, we can't play you. It's really that simple. And it's unfortunate because he's been effective in his limited minutes, and he very clearly has a value that goes beyond the stat sheet to everybody else on the team. It's good he traveled with the team while he was suspended, that he's practicing. All of that stuff is good. I hope he gets one more opportunity, and I hope, like Zach Jones, he forces them to keep him in the lineup, because he really did. We thought he was going to be a nothing burger, that he was going to stay in the lineup till the deadline, and then as soon as the deadline passed, they would replace him, whether that was Brodzinski going down to the fourth line or something else that we weren't thinking of. If he forces their hand and stays in, great. If he comes back in and does something stupid and gets suspended again, or gets into that gray area where maybe he should get suspended, then the Rangers are going to have a real conversation about, can we trust playing this kid in the playoffs?
I think that they are going to use this 6-week stretch until the playoffs, or 4-week stretch, or however long it is, to figure that out.
Yeah.
This is their runway of, hey, you did this thing that clearly you cannot do. We're gonna sit you down. We're gonna talk to you about it. We're gonna explain all of the ways to not do that next time. You know, like, don't skate elbow first into people's heads. Please don't do that. Thank you very much. But I think this next few weeks here, they're gonna play, and they're gonna put him in the, maybe they might put him in tomorrow, just because of how, first of all, it's a home game. Second of all, the team loves having him. So maybe they shift Broads out. Maybe they shift somebody else out. I don't know. But I think they'll try to find a way to squeeze him in and say, okay, if you want to be a part of this roster come playoff time, show us that we can trust you.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, like you talked about, like, you have positive value when you're on the ice. You're contributing offensively. You're getting to the dirty areas. Goalies can't see a thing if you're in front of them. You know, Rempe is doing a really good job when he's out there. The problem becomes when he's going at people's heads with his elbow, or when he gets coaxed into fighting the worst player on the other team so that he gets to sit out for 5 minutes while the other guy feels good about himself. Like, those are the negative aspects of his game that he has to iron out. So I feel like the Rangers are going to sit him down and be like, okay, if we can trust you, then show us. Go these next few weeks without incident, and then we can trust you. But if things happen again where you get suspended, or, you know, or something else negative happens, then we cannot trust you. This is your time to prove it. I feel like they're going to do this with him because of how much the locker room loves him. The fans love him. He's a positive contribution on the ice. And also, they need him for depth. Yeah. If they can't trust him for depth, they're going to usurp him and go to somebody else, and I don't think the Rangers want to do that because of how much the team loves him. So they're going to try their best, I think, to give him as much of a runway these next few weeks as possible and see if he can prove himself.
That's the thing, man. You can't do the 11 forwards thing. Yeah. You can't. It's just not a tenable solution in the postseason. I know everybody loves to talk about how Stu Bickle played 6 minutes in a triple overtime game. There's a reason those John Tortorella Rangers teams never really went on deep runs, because he trusted about 7 forwards out of 12. And by the end of a conference final, those guys were absolutely shot. You need all 12 hands. You need all 60. Hell, we talked about it a few weeks ago and why I wanted another one. You're probably going to need 8 defensemen to get to the Stanley Cup final, just on pure math. You're probably,
and the Rangers do right now.
Yes. When everyone's healthy, they do have 8 defensemen. Yeah. But we're really up against it now. They are really thin, both at the Hartford level and up here on the back end. You know, forwards up front, they have an extra guy in Edstrom who they feel can play reasonably well in a pinch. I wish they would give Berard a look at some point in the next few weeks just to see what he's looking like up here, because it can't hurt. But the last thing I want to touch on before we round up for today's episode, they've got a handful of games left. They are not in a particularly precarious position. They're 68 games in. They've got 14 to go. They're second place in the entire NHL behind the Bruins. They're going to have a reasonable chance of winning the division. That would be encouraging. You don't want to play Carolina in the first round, but if Carolina passes you and you play the Flyers in the first round, that's a different conversation. The East is awful. The East is genuinely all that last playoff spot is going to come down to what the West did last year, where it's the last guy standing by default. Like, all of these teams are eliminating themselves. The Islanders, they went on a nice run. You know, they won six in a row, but really quickly putting all of their talent on one line has kind of exposed their depth issues. And Sorokin's been fine, but he hasn't been great. The Flyers, they have poor Sam Harrison's played almost every game down the stretch for them. That's not particularly tenable. The Lightning are injured to hell, even though they played really well against the Rangers. And you don't really want to doubt a team with all of that, with that pedigree. And Detroit has just kind of capitulated down the stretch here. So this is a real conversation for the Rangers, because if they keep playing the way they are, there's a reasonable chance they're going to play whoever that last team in is. And it's early to start counting your eggs, but you don't want to count your chickens before they hatch. But the path is there. The path for a good playoff run is there. And it ties into something we always talk about in regards to the Rangers, Andrew. Can you win a series in less than seven games?
Please.
That is an essential component. Vegas won the Stanley Cup in 20 games last year. Yeah. Colorado won the Cup 2 years ago, I want to say in 22 games. You realistically need to win at least one, if not two, series in five games if you want to go all the way. And this is as good an opportunity as you were going to have to win a series in short order. I mean, you think about it. The last time they won a series in less than six games was Pittsburgh in 2015. And that team went to the conference final game seven and just ran out of guys because there were so many important players who were playing hurt. It is essential you take care of business and put a team away early and don't give them an opportunity to come back into a series against you.
You can't let bad teams hang around.
Yep.
That's
inviting trouble.
That's the mission statement for the Rangers this playoff series. Is in round one, more than likely you're going to play a bad team. You have to end them early. The more you let these teams hang around, the more momentum, one, they have. Two, the more you're inviting injuries. And you're still running the tank that you have. At the start of the playoffs, everybody's at 100%, or at least mentally they're 100%. By the end of the playoffs, everyone is so exhausted beyond belief that, like, you know, you gave everything you possibly had to play and this and that. So the more energy and the more health you can save by ending bad teams early, the more energy and available healthy guys you're going to have when it gets tough, when it gets to round two, round three, round four, if you get there. If by just ending bad teams that you know you're better than as early as you possibly can, it just makes the entire run that much easier. Instead of going to game seven against the Islanders when you know you're better than them, or game seven against, I don't know, the Red Wings or the Flyers, who are just hanging on by a thread, don't let them climb up the rope that's about to snap in half. Just get your pair of scissors and break the rope. Don't let them hang around. Like, that's the most important thing. And that's when, like you talked about, that's one of the biggest reasons the Rangers might not have had the success that they might have / should have / whatever word that you want to put in there, is because they went 6-7 games every round, and that gets exhausting. And also, when you end series early, you get a break. You don't have to play games for a little bit. You could just sit back and watch other teams kill each other while you have a drink in your hand, just chilling, just waiting for them. The faster you can do that, the more time you have to recuperate, to re-energize, and now you're ready to go against a team that is not as ready to go as you are.
I'll see Matt Karkner in hell. That's the last thought I have for you on today's episode. I'll see Matt Karkner and the 2011-12 Senators in hell for what they did in that series. God,
the Senators. Clark MacArthur, baby. That's.
Yeah, those teams used to play terrorist hockey. I know we make that joke about soccer teams, but the Senators really did used to play terrorist hockey. Those bottom sixes were just littered with guys who couldn't play hockey and were just out there to antagonize. But. Yep. That'll just about do it for this week's episode of the Liberty Blue Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. Leave the show a 5-star review on whichever podcast platform you prefer. If you are watching over on YouTube, on Twitch, on X, wherever you are watching the show, make sure you are following the show's feed. If you're on YouTube, drop the video a like, and we will see you guys next week.